Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks again.
If you could get used to hearing this from your customers, you should use Australia Post to deliver to them. Because when they receive their delivery quickly, securely, and at a time and place that suits them, they won't thank us, they'll thank you. Your customers will thank you for using Australia Post. Go to auspost.com.au/forbusiness to find out more.
I'm Dr. Theo Spirakis from Bexley Dental, and I can give you back your smile. With the all-on-4 dental procedure, I can put an end to broken and missing teeth and uncomfortable dentures. Book your free all-on-4 consultation now at bexleydental.com.au.
And now on Nights with Steve Price, the Memory Health Show, brought to you by Suvenate. See memorydrink.com.au for more information.
And it is the Memory Health Show. The line is open, 131873. We are good enough to have Associate Professor Michael Woodward with us tonight, and pharmacist Peter Guthrie is also joining us. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
We'd really like your calls, 131873. We wanted tonight to have a look at dementia, particularly through the perspective of a pharmacist. Peter, I might start with you if that's all right. I would imagine you would have many people that come to you, family members and people that are concerned for themselves, that are not quite sure where to start, and you would possibly be their first point of call, I would imagine.
Absolutely. So we have there's 31,000 pharmacists in Australia. I'm just one of them. And across Australia, we have pharmacists who work in aged care. We have pharmacists who work in hospitals. And I'm one of the pharmacists who works in community pharmacy. And that would be, for most listeners, the pharmacist that they're most familiar with. And as you deal with people, particularly as they get older, you do see people come in quite regularly. We see the average person about 12 times a year in pharmacy. And as they get older, that becomes more frequent. So people do come to you with concerns. People do come to you very interested in your advice and what you have to say. And sometimes it's a second opinion. They've been to see a family member, or they've been to see another member of their health team, and they're just looking for a second voice to come and listen.
Michael, I would imagine it would be an incredibly frightening time for people just at that point when they're starting to have a concern for a family member or for themselves.
Obviously, people are concerned about diagnoses such as Alzheimer's disease, but often memory problems aren't due to that, and that's why it's important to see a health professional to start with. Start with your general practitioner. But it's interesting that quite a few people have memory problems that are actually first noticed or first discussed with their pharmacist, so it's very important that the pharmacist is well versed in where to go from there and also the initial treatment and management options.
And for you, what are some of the first things that you talk to people about when they're having concerns around dementia, Michael?
So I say to them what's been going on, and I speak to somebody who knows them well. Have they been forgetting important events? Have they been forgetting parts of their recent history, what they did for their birthday, what they did for Christmas, what they had for breakfast yesterday? Are they misplacing objects? Are they repeating themselves? Now, sometimes people have all of these symptoms at various times, but if they're happening repeatedly, then it's worthwhile having a further assessment. And it's interesting, as I said, sometimes this is first picked up by the pharmacist. The person will come back saying, I've lost my script again, or the pharmacist will note that they're asking the same question over and over again. And this is why it's important to have all members of the healthcare team, including pharmacists, involved in the initial detection, if you like, and then ongoing assessment of people with memory problems.
Michael, that's a very important point that you do pick up on, is the, as a person gets older, the level of contact that they actually have with their pharmacist is increases, and quite often they will be seeing you, Peter, for another reason, and then you're able to pick up on something.
Absolutely. We know that as people get older, there's a number of different health conditions that they're probably experiencing, and some of those health conditions turn out to be risk factors for dementia and other conditions as well. Diabetes and cardiovascular disease are modifiable risk factors, so you may be seeing people who are coming in for prescriptions for those conditions, or indeed they're caring, they may have those conditions themselves, but they're caring for other people who they're just noticing signs of memory loss. So some people may be regular customers that you're packing dose administration aids for. Some people may be regular customers. And if they go from being very independent and self-assured and in control to all of a sudden something's changed, something's a little bit different, you absolutely pick up that something's not quite right here, and how can I direct them to some care that will get a little bit further into investigating and help them out?
Michael, there seems to be very few things, too, that can be as frightening as the thought of somebody concerned that they're losing their memory and they're going down. And there's irreparable damage.
Yes, a recent survey in the United Kingdom showed that one of the most feared health conditions is now dementia. It used to be cancer or heart attack or stroke. It's actually now dementia. But I repeat that in the very early stages, a lot can be done. Sometimes memory loss is not the early stages of dementia. It can be from other causes. Sometimes we're depressed. Sometimes it could be a side effect of our medication. But if we are worried about our memory or others are worried about their loved one's memory, it is important to be assessed. It's not appropriate to brush it under the carpet because we can do things. In fact, as the sponsor of this program knows, Suvinate is a medical food, and this is something that pharmacists should be aware of, is a medical food that can be used in the early stages of memory loss to actually slow it down and reverse or prevent some of the changes that would otherwise occur.
Let's have a look at that. Let's expand on that. Is the things that people can do to improve their memory? I mean, from a pharmacist's point of view, Peter, what do you recommend?
The lifestyle modification is definitely the first thing to talk about in terms of preventative, and Dementia Australia has some great resources on their website that consumers can look at, and they're things that I would use in my practice to talk about keeping your mind quite busy. I know it's something that the Memory Show here has talked about in previous weeks. Very much having a good balanced diet, very much having exercise as part of your lifestyle. But if people do hear about new products in the market, pharmacists and other health professionals are a great place to start for advice as well.
Yeah. And with the diet, where do you even start with a person's diet? Do you talk to them about their current habits? And
absolutely. There's not too many of us that can probably profess to having amazing diets as it comes. In the modern world, there are a lot of temptations in the world in terms of diet. Getting the basics right is a very good start. And certainly looking at some of those contributing factors, particularly in some of the different vitamins, can be useful. But it's important that that's an evidence-based conversation and working through each person with their individual circumstances, because everyone's dietary needs are slightly different. Some people, their general health advice can be really great, and others need more tailored advice that will come from other health professionals.
And Michael, does diet make that big a difference for people? I guess sometimes it can be the last thing that we think of, but it should possibly be the first thing that we think of.
And indeed, we should think of it even earlier in life, in our 30s and 40s, if not throughout the whole of our life. It's been shown that the Mediterranean diet, which is not necessarily what you might find in restaurants in Italian and Greek and etc.
yes,
restaurants,
yes.
but in fact, what they actually eat, and if you like, the villages of the Mediterranean countries, lots of fruit, lots of vegetables, not too much red meat, plenty of white meat and fish, not too much in the way of sweets, olive oil as the fat. These are the sorts of diets, or this is the sort of diet that has actually been associated with a lower risk of decline in memory and possibly a lower risk of Alzheimer's disease. That's the diet that we would prefer people to eat, particularly if they're worried about their memory, but even before they start worrying about it.
And it does, and you have seen the Mediterranean diet. You've seen that play out well in people's lives.
Well,
because it seems so simple sometimes, doesn't it? And people think, well, it's so simple, it's not really going to work. But it's not the case, is it?
It's not the only factor. We do need to also make sure that we're physically fit, that we're not overweight, and that we keep our mind and social calendar as occupied as possible. But the diet is an important part of that. I certainly recommend it to all of my patients, and I think you'll find pharmacists will have the same sort of conversation. It's not a matter of just taking pills. It's a matter of having a proper, well-balanced diet.
Peter, you would get quite close to a lot of your customers, I would imagine, and get to know them very well. And you would see them, I guess, in their lifestyle changing. Perhaps they have recently retired or they've lost somebody close to them. Do you see that that lifestyle change really having an effect on them in their memory?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's quite difficult in the nature of the interactions. We have to pick out what exactly the cause is. So sometimes the symptoms of memory loss can be signs of stress or anxiety. Sometimes people are having a really tough short period in their life. But when they become more prolonged, when you're noticing continual decline over time, that's when you start to get a little bit more worried about what's going on. Taking people aside, having a bit more of a chat. There are some sort of longer format consultations and discussions that we have in pharmacies. Sometimes, particularly with our regulars, we become very familiar with them. We know them quite well. We know what their loves and passions are. And if those suddenly change or they start to decline or people lose interest over time, you're starting to get a bit worried and you're starting to try and connect them back to their GP as the first place to have that conversation.
Do you think, Michael, this is something that we have paid enough attention to over the years?
I don't think memory problems have come completely out of the closet. We've managed to move cancer away from a hush-hush sort of condition that nobody talks about into something that people are quite happy to talk about. Many other medical conditions are now commonplace rather than hidden. But I think concerns about memory, and in particular Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia, have not necessarily moved into mainstream conversation, but they should be. We've got nearly 500,000 Australians who have dementia as I speak. If you look at the Dementia Australia website, which has some very useful information about diet and including how you could use your pharmacist to help you sort this out, there's a lot of information there, and they show that there's not only 500,000 people now with dementia, but it's going to rise to about 1 million people in the near future if we don't do something.
I thank you very much, both of you. Please, we'll take a break and we'll come back. If you've got a question for either Michael Woodward or for Peter Guthrie, please, 131-873. This is The Memory Show. We'll come back in a moment.
And now on Nights with Steve Price, The Memory Health Show, brought to you by Suvenate. See memorydrink.com.au for more information.
Yeah, it's filling in for Pricey for the next couple of weeks. Right across the country, the number's 131-873. This is The Memory Health Show. Associate Professor Michael Woodward is here. Peter Guthrie, pharmacist, is also here. And Cindy's on the line on 131-873. Hello, Cindy.
Yes, good evening.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have. My question is there any relationship between dementia and too many general anaesthetics?
So, Michael Woodward here. Cynthia, that's a very good question. I'm involved in some research with St Vincent's Hospital in Melbourne looking just at that. There is certainly evidence that people seem to have more memory problems after a general anaesthetic. Sometimes it's because they had memory problems before, but they weren't particularly worried about them, or nobody was noticing them. But obviously we think maybe the anaesthetic itself is doing some damage to the brain. And I would suggest that certainly if you've had anaesthetics, or your loved one has had anaesthetics and they've had some memory problems, it'd be best to avoid them if possible, but I'm not saying go without necessary surgery. At this stage, the jury is still out. We do not know conclusively that anaesthesia or even surgery itself is damaging to the brain and with respect to our memory, our cognition, but it may be, and we need more work to work this out.
Cindy, thank you very
much. My husband is just heading for his sixth general anaesthetic in just under a year. And he does have some memory problems at this stage.
Yeah, so as I said, it would be better if other approaches could be used. But my goodness, if he needs an anaesthetic for whatever condition he's got, he should certainly have that.
To both of you gentlemen, I want to ask you this question. I know you would have been asked this many times before, but I remember Bob Hawke, who has recently passed away, but something he did for his memory was crosswords, encrypted crosswords, and worked those like crazy. I think he would do two big ones before he did anything else in the day. Does that make a huge difference to a person's to memory and their brain health?
Yeah, there's some evidence that stimulating the brain, particularly in areas that we're not particularly comfortable with, for instance, if we're good at numbers, do crosswords. If we're good at words, do Sudokus and other number games. Bob Hawke, of course, is an amazing figure. He would have had a huge amount of what we call reserve, possibly challenged it a little bit. Possibly challenged it a little bit with a few too many beers, but basically, he was doing all the right things, I'm sure.
All right, so just remember that before you start sculling back the beers thinking you're going to end your life like Bob Hawke, just remember, as you say, that he did have a few things in reserve. Let me ask you a personal question. Peter, what do you do to keep your brain going?
Well, I have been a fan of crosswords and Sudokus in the past. I'm also quite a avid media follower. Scrolling through Twitter is one of the first things I probably do in the morning on the trams on the way to work. And equally trying to sort of analyse the news and sort of piece it all back together. So I think that keeps my brain busy outside of pharmacy. But I also think that being a pharmacist and working with all the medicines and consumers and trying to make that useful health information definitely keeps my brain busy as well.
Michael, publishing in medical journals perhaps, but what is the what do you do personally for your memory health?
Yeah, certainly reviewing all those publications keep me busy. I'm about four behind at the moment, but I do one or two a day on some days. I certainly exercise. That's a really important piece of advice to all my patients and those who are listening. 150 minutes of at least moderate level exercise a week. I try and get well above that is very good. And also, I think just making sure that you avoid risk factors such as hearing loss, depression, becoming too sedentary. There's a number of things we can do. We may not tick all the boxes, and anybody who is being ruthlessly honest would probably find one or two boxes that they're not properly ticking, but the more we tick, the better.
I need your help with it. I play a musical instrument. That has been a big help over the years, hasn't it? For me personally, it seems to have worked well, and I've heard that's one of the best things you can do.
Yeah, that uses more of your brain than many other activities, and there is evidence that learning a new musical instrument or mastering one if you already play it at a basic level can be very good for building up reserves so that we can tolerate the build-up of this toxic protein, the amyloid protein that eventually leads to Alzheimer's disease. You know, we are making, on average, about 28 picograms, that's a tiny amount, of this protein a day. We secrete it during our sleep. Some people don't secrete it very well, and it builds up until it gets to the magic number of 1.5 milligrams, and then we actually have significant features of dementia. Playing a musical instrument is one way to help us secrete this toxic protein, but so is getting enough sleep and some of the other factors that we've been talking about today.
Yeah, tell that to my neighbours. Mark is on the phone from Brisbane, listening through 4BC. Hello, Mark.
How you doing today, guys?
Good, go ahead.
It was interesting that you talk about musical instruments being a good release to stave off dementia. I'm a musician and a singer, and been playing professionally for a while now. I had an experience not that long back now. I lost my father to dementia just on 2 years ago, exactly the same year that the late Glenn Campbell was lost to dementia himself. In a household, I grew up with and exposed to lots and lots of music, and I play a few instruments, some better than others. At the moment, guitar is my chosen weapon. And I suppose from my point of view, watching my father slip away to what he did, it really sort of, shocked me to the core. And I thought, well, what can I do? You know, what can I do about this? And
Michael, would you like to take that first?
Well, unfortunately, one of the risk factors for dementia is a family history. So having a parent with dementia increases our own personal risk. And as such, it's very important that we're even more diligent, more careful about these risk reduction factors, such as learning a musical instrument, the diet that we've been talking about, etc. I wouldn't necessarily start swallowing handfuls of tablets or vitamins. And Peter might want to say something about that in terms of people who are just worried about their memory without any actual memory problem at this stage. But there's a lot of impetus in that situation where we've lost a father from dementia to do even more in our personal life to prevent it. But Peter, what do you say to people who are coming along saying, I'd need vitamins because my dad's just had dementia?
I think that's a really good question, in that when someone comes with a request, it might be a product request, it might be a request for something quite specific, it's really important to sort of stop and ask why. What's brought you into this pharmacy today? What's the fear behind the question? What's the concern? What's the worry that's really brought you here? And in some cases, people have done their research, they're quite confident in the product, and you can help them navigate to a particular item that they're looking for. But in other cases, you often unpack much more complex stories. And in some cases, we can work through that in the pharmacy. In other cases, we need to refer people on. So if someone comes in saying, I want to take a handful of tablets because I'm concerned about dementia, it's probably not the starting point. It probably is someone coming in with a concern that you need to work through. It is a condition that is slow degenerating, so it's not something that happens instantly. It doesn't happen overnight. So you do have time to work through those concerns and fears. And so you do have a healthcare team. You can link them in and be part of that conversation.
And what if you have a person that comes to, you know, to either of you asking advice, and they say, look, I'm incredibly concerned about this other person in my life, but I don't know how to tell them that they need some help, and I don't know how to move them in that direction. Peter, how do you, because that's a tough one.
It is tough, and some people are tougher than others. Some people you can have that really quite open and friendly conversation with and say, look, take them to their doctor. But if they are very reluctant, if they are very stubborn, sometimes you need a softer approach. Sometimes it might be a case of saying, well, if you're talking to me about they're struggling with their medicines generally and you think there might be some other concerns behind that, maybe suggest their doctor recommends them for a medicine review, where a pharmacist goes into the home and conducts a longer interview and then makes some recommendations back to the doctor, because that's going to give that practitioner a much better insight into what's happening in that person's home. The medicines might be the opening part of that, but they might also pick up on some other things and help move that conversation along without being so threatening.
Because, Michael, that is a tough conversation to have, and not just from a professional point of view. It is a very hard one to look for those signs in people, or to see those signs in people, and then to have that conversation.
Yes, I'd say about a third of the patients that I assessed have come along not because of their own concerns, but because of concerns of family members or of their GP. And it is a difficult conversation, but we really do need to take such concerns seriously. So I do a basic memory test, and if they're showing clear signs of memory loss, it's really important to go along with the diagnosis. But that can take quite some time. It can even take some time to get to see me. And that's when it's important to do something right away. Sometimes it's advice about diet and exercise and all the things we've talked about tonight. Sometimes it's very appropriate to start a medical food such as Suvinaid when there's clear evidence of memory loss, not when there's concerns about memory loss, but when there's clear loss already.
And to seek advice and to stop in and talk to your pharmacist, Peter, obviously.
Absolutely. That topic of fear is so important, and particularly when people talk about dementia, it's often said that there's not a lot of good news in dementia. There is bits and pieces emerging around the world, and it's really important you sort of have that opening conversation.
Gentlemen, I thank you both very much. News in a moment.
Celebrating Origin 3 with a beautiful bundle of wine from Molly's Cradle. This exclusive Molly's bundle includes the new release 2019 Sauvignon Blanc and Premium Cradle Cab Sav, plus chockies and other goodies valued at over $125. Online, $59.99 with free delivery in the Sydney metro area. This exclusive Molly's online offer must end at full time tonight. Go to mollyscradle.com.au for this beautiful bundle of wine while stocks last.